I was talking to an Indie yesterday, and he suggested it would be a good idea if I gave somewhat of a global review of the field. So that's what I'm going to do, and along the way, I will mention some more recent and technical work concerning membranes with boundaries. And in this talk, I'm going to mention a lot of work by a lot of people, but these are my collaborators at least. James Bedford, who was a PhD student at Queen Mary and is now a postdoc at Imperial. Neil Copeland, who was my student in Cambridge and is now a postdoc in Brussels. I'm saying all this to see, show you that students can get jobs and work on membrane. Laura Tadrowski was my PhD student at Queen Mary, and she decided to leave physics and got a job at Morgan Stanley, even in the current crisis. Now, I used to joke, and this was last year, I used to joke, as of today, that's still true, but actually she got sacked last week, so she's now currently looking for another banking job. And Dan Thompson, who's my current student at Queen Mary, and will be applying in the fall. Okay. This is an outline of what we're going to cover. So I'm going to begin at the beginning and tell you what M-theory is. I'm going to tell you what brains there are in M-theory and what properties they have from our knowledge of things like ADS-CFT and our knowledge of anomalies, etc. And basically, through studying certain properties, we ended up with some mysteries about how brains interact in M-theory. Then, I suppose, 2 years ago now, Bagger and Lambert came up with really a breakthrough in this field of how to describe interacting membranes, and then that was followed up by Aharoni, Bergman, Jefferies, and Maldacena, along with some other people, and we'll discuss that, and then we'll move on to the topic that's closest to my heart, which is membranes with a boundary, and I hope to motivate that so that you can see that this has something to do with fine grains. Okay. So for the purposes of this talk, M-theory is the strong coupling limit of the two-way string. Low energy effective action is given by 11-dimensional supergravity. And then its extended objects, i.e. its half BPS solutions, are the membrane and the fibrane. And then you have this relationship between M-theory and the two-way string, which is the famous relationship between the coupling and the radius of compactification. Now, and then you have, along with that, a dictionary of how membranes and fibranes relate to objects in the two-way string, as follows. This is all old stuff. Now, although I've defined M-theory that way, it's important to realize that M-theory is more than that, because otherwise it just becomes a tautology. What M-theory does is that you can then see through compact-Fang M-theory on different manifolds, you then get different string theories. So on T2, you'll get the 2B string, and then interestingly on things like K3, you'll get the heterotic string. So although we say it's a strong coupling limit of 2A, actually once you're there through different compactifications, we can learn about other string theories. But I won't be doing that. What I'll be doing is working directly in 11 dimensions and trying to then learn about how brains interact in M-theory. Now, basically, a good description for brains when we have a large number of them is the supergravity solution. When we have a single brain, we can use the equivalent of Nambu-Goto and some sort of equivalent type things for a single fibrane. The problem is what you do in between that when you have, for example, three or eight brains that are coincident. And that was a puzzle for a while. But first, let's see what we can learn using the supergravity solutions about the large N limit of these interacting brain theories. So by now, all this is very famous. If we take the near horizon limit of the membrane solution, we get ADS4 cross S7 or ADS7 cross S4 for the fibrane. And really, there's one thing which you need to know when you do this, which is how the radius of curvature of the ADS space relates to N, the number of brains in the theory. And from that information, using things like thermodynamics of black holes in ADS with that radius, you can learn about things like the entropy. Other sort of obvious things which are, I mean, is present with the fact that this is an ADS space, is that you expect this to be a conformal theory with 16 supercharges. And then, as I say, from looking at thermodynamic properties, and in the case of the fire brain, also anomaly calculations, we can discover the following thing. So you're interested in how the number of degrees of freedom of this interacting brain theory scales with n the number of brains. So for the membrane, you discover it goes like n to the 3 over 2. So of course, this should be a discrete number. So this is just in the large n limit. It scales like n to the 3 over 2. And for the M5, it scales like n cubed. Now, this is sort of very curious. And what you should do is compare this to Yang-Mills theory in the D3 brain. So for the D3 brain, we know that when we do this and we look at ADS5, then we get the fact that the conformal field theory has n squared degrees of freedom, and we're familiar with that from Yang-Mills theory. What this tells you is that the membrane has fewer degrees of freedom than Yang-Mills theory, perhaps, and the fire brain has more. Now, the fire brain one is particularly curious because it says that you're looking for a theory that has more than any gauge theory in some sense, at least trivially. I'll make more comments about that. And the fact that the M2 has less gives you some hope that you can encapsulate that in an ordinary type of gauge theory. And it's just you'll reduce the number of degrees of freedom by going to strong coupling. Okay, because when you go to strong coupling, you typically have a fewer number of degrees of freedom. Any questions so far? Okay. Well, okay, depends which way you described it. So you could, if you want, you could give it to Maldacena, because he found the ADS4 and ADS7 duals, and then it sort of follows from that. But before that, you had Klebanov and Gubsa with scattering calculations. That gives you the same answer. Thermodynamic calculations were done by the usual people who did thermodynamic calculations of brains before ADS-CFT, and it's in there. The anomaly cancellation for the M5, which is particularly interesting because it also gives you the 1 over n correction, was done by Harvey, Minassian, and Moore. So there's a whole, if you like, there's a whole load of ways in which all these things agree, and various people did different calculations. And this is sort of deemed to be, I mean, especially the fire brain one, one of the main puzzles in M theory.
Energy.
Well, you can get the mass. So, I mean, the tension of the brain, you mean. But so the other thing that's of interest here is, because that was essentially when you have co-instant brain theories, is what about how membranes and fibrains interact amongst themselves? And there's one very interesting way in which membranes and fibrains interact, which is that a membrane can end on a fibrain. As such, the fibrain is effectively the D-brain of M theory, okay? Because you can have the membrane ending on it. Now, for a single fibrain, we can actually construct a soliton solution inside the fibrain, which is given by the fibrain fields, a self-dual 3 form and a scalar. And this solution, which is essentially like a spike solution inside the fibrain wall volume, describes the membrane ending on it. So the picture goes something like this. You have your fibrain here. And there is some spike given by that harmonic function of the scalar field, and the scalar field is how this fibrain is embedded, and this sort of spike is the M2. Okay, So this is equivalent to, for people who are familiar with it, the Bayon description in for how, for example, a fundamental string or a D1 brain will end on a D3 brain. So you have that description of how an M2 will end on M5 from the five-brain point of view. Yeah, exactly. That's, so you're using your knowledge of a single M5 brain. And then we can go and do further analyses and again go through what we did before and look at things like anomaly cancellation. So this is then a string solution inside this five brain. And you can again calculate the sort of things that you did for the supergravity solutions to come up with degrees of freedom counts. And one should really think of this as some object in its own right living inside the five brain. Now, in string theory, we can also describe a D1 string ending on a D3 brain in a similar way. That's the Bayon. So it's sort of like a monopole inside the D3 brain as a half BPS solution. But you can also view the same system from the D1 brain perspective. So in other words, you look at the half BPS equation on the D1 instead of the half BPS equation on the D3. And that equation is the NAM equation. So for those of you who are not familiar, this is a very old construction. The relationship between NAM equations and monopoles immediately follows geometrically in this construction from looking switching between D3 and D1 perspectives. And the cute thing here is that the solution of the NAM equation produces a fuzzy two-sphere whose radius blows up to infinity, generating two extra dimensions to give the three-brain. So what you have from that point of view is you have a D1, but actually the D1 has within it some fuzzy S2, and then this blows up, so where the radius of the S2 diverges, and we get an additional two dimensions to generate the D3. Okay, so this is again some old work. And then what was asked, essentially by Jeff Harvey, is can we do the same for the membrane to describe the self-dual string? So on the one side, you had a description here from the five-brain point of view, where this was some sort of half BPS solution in the five-brain, but then can you do the same thing and describe the five-brain from the membrane point of view? But we need an action of interacting membranes, and we don't have one. So Jeff Harvey, with his student Bazou at the time, the idea was to construct an action for the membrane that would reverse engineer this. Okay, so you'd find an action, you'd want it to be n equals 8 supersymmetric, and have some BPS equation, which is now known as the Bazou-Harvey equation, that would then have solutions that would be like this, only, or rather, this, only instead of having an S2 here, you have an S3, and you generate three extra dimensions to produce the fibrin. Okay, so what Bazou and Harvey did was write down the equation of the fuzzy three funnel that generated the right geometry, but they didn't have an action. And then Bagger and Lambert actually produced the n equals 8 supersymmetric action that had the Bazou-Harvey equation as the BPS equation. Okay, and that action was then taken as defining the interacting membrane. So this is sort of a bit weird how this was done. There was no fundamental principle determining the symmetries that this action should have, I mean, apart from n equals 8. I mean, in terms of the non-abelian structure, it was just set up so that the half BPS equation will give you the right geometry by this sort of analogy.
Such action?
Probably certainly not, I think. I mean, well, for n equals 8,
it's not unique to get the Bazou-Harvey equation, that's for sure. The addition of n equals 8 supersymmetry certainly makes it unique. So, and I'm going to come back to that. And in fact, I'll come back to that.
So yeah, you get the right BPS equation, but n equals 8 really pins it for you.
work trying to generalize the Basu Harvey equation? I mean, could there be some other equation which produces the same thing?
Not really. The Basu Harvey equation is quite. I mean, you actually, from this picture of the fly brain, you know really the geometry of the setup. So you know all the scalings of everything. And you really want to match it on the nose. So the Basu Harvey equation will actually fix all coefficients and everything. Otherwise, you won't match over. So let me describe Bauer and Lambert.
So what they did was produce something with a non-associative algebra. I mean, I should say that people had thought about this before, and they'd not managed to do it. Essentially, they thought there was a no-go theorem, and John Schwartz wrote a very interesting paper saying it couldn't be done. It's always good when there's a no-go theorem. And the way around it was really simple. It wasn't simple. It wasn't simple from this point of view. It's simple from a later point of view. Was that there was an assumption that the algebra was associative. So the remarkable thing is that you can make this work if your fields live in a non-associative algebra. Because I'm short of time, I'm not going to go through this too much. But I'll just say that what you end up with a non-associative algebra, you end up with something called a three algebra. So you define things in terms of a three bracket with some structure constants as follows, as opposed to normal Lie algebra. Then you discover that the akin to the thing that's akin to the usual Jacobi identity of Lie algebras is this identity. And everything's looking quite cozy. And then you see that you have to gauge this symmetry, which they did, and then introduce an additional gauge field that gauges this symmetry. And finally, you end up with this n equals 8 action for 8 scalars. Fermionic partners, Mikawa coupling, potential, which is sextic, with this three bracket governing the interaction, and this rather weird twisted Chern-Simons term. So this was a brand new action at the time, and people got very excited. And then I saw Neil, and he got very upset. And, well, okay, there's the supersymmetry variations. And the reason he got upset was the following reason. That the equivalent of the Jacobi identity on F has only one solution, which is when F is equal to the epsilon tensor. This means that you can't do what you want to do. In usual D brains, you say, okay, I've got a theory of interacting D brains. I pick out the algebra corresponding to the number of brains, S-U-N, U-N. Here, there is only one solution, the epsilon tensors, which makes this theory essentially SO4. For this case, the twisted Chern-Simons theory becomes particularly simple. Your SO4 decomposes into two SU2s, and you just get a difference of two SU2 Chern-Simons theories coupled to matter. So it doesn't become very exotic anymore. So what's going on? I should also say, what about the coupling? In this theory, because we have essentially matter coupled to Chern-Simons theory, we can have a coupling constant k, which is the level of the Chern-Simons theory. I should say the coupling is 1 over k. K is some integer related to the level of Chern-Simons theory. Then, and this is quantized and not renormalized, so that's OK. But we've got to interpret the coupling. Now, in M theory, there is no coupling. So it all looked very good until you realize that you can't do an arbitrary number of brains because the algebra is fixed. But on the other hand, the thing that you wanted to be fixed, which is the fact with the coupling, is not fixed. You've introduced a coupling somehow. So we need to interpret this. Okay, so these are the problems. So there were two possibilities, or three. To get around that no-go theorem, you could allow yourself to have a Lorentzian signature on the algebra. So I didn't discuss the properties of the trace form, but effectively, previously I was using a delta function, sorry, Konica delta. You can drop the overall anti-symmetry condition on the structure constants, or you could just forget about this crazy three algebra stuff And because you previously had SU2 cross SU2, just generalize what you've done is having Chern-Simons coupled to matter with just G cross G groups. Okay. And all these three possibilities are investigated. First case, the Lorentzian algebra case, was done by these people. And the problem is, when you have the trace form having Lorentzian signature, you end up with ghost-like modes. So then you need to gauge them away, which Schwartz did. And then you can show something quite remarkable. The theory reduces to Yang-Mills theory. And the coupling, which in three dimensions, three-dimensional Yang-Mills, the coupling is dimensionful, arises through spontaneous supersymmetry breaking in the conformal symmetry of that theory. Now, these sort of properties haven't been very well investigated, but it's I think, anyway, quite nice that you have an example of a three-dimensional theory that's conformal, and you spontaneously break conformal symmetry to give you Yang-Mills theory with a dimension. And then it turned out that the second and third options of changing that algebra were equivalent. So just generalizing this to a product of gauge groups was done by Aharoni, Bergman, Jaffers, and Malvicena. And that turns out to be equivalent to lifting the anti-symmetry of the structure constants of Bagger and Lambert. The problem is that you have to abandon n equals 8 supersymmetry, and you only have n equals 6. And, well, that's just what you have to live with. But the reason why ABGM came to be thought of as being correct is that when you looked at the moduli space of vacua for the UN cross UN theory, then you had R to the power 8n over ZK over SN. And then this was identified as being the same as the moduli space of N membranes on a ZK orbifold. And that allowed you to answer the two questions that Bagger-Lambert had problems with, which is, first of all, how many membranes do you have? We have N of them for UN cross UN. And it also tells you the origin of that coupling constant you've introduced, K, and why it's discrete. It's associated to having a ZK orbifold in the theory. Okay. So, and then 1 over K provides a coupling, can be taken to be small. And that means K large. And in this perturbative limit, it's the same as if you look at the fact that you're taking the same limit on the S7 of ADS4 cross S7 near horizon geometry. This gives the new geometry of ADS4 cross CP3. This is because you write S7 as S1 over CP3. And that orbifolding acts on the S1 inside that. And when you take K go to infinity, that effectively shrinks that S1 to 0, giving you this. And then this gave a new perturbative compactification of M theory with a new ADS-CFT correspondence, and a whole bunch of people who are interested in integrability then did a lot of work on that. Okay. Any questions?
So that was a
sort of review of where people were at last year. Now, we want to go back to the self. Yes, anything?
Is there a similar thing for ADS5 cross CP2 or something?
So you need to know what. Hey, can you write S?
Yes.
Thank you.
There's an integrity story there. I don't know.
You can write S5 as. How do you do it?
You want bundles.
Yeah. Good. Okay.
So back to the self-dual string. So now what we're going to do, because I introduced this idea that what we want to think of is the membrane ending on the the membrane will end on the phi brain, and the phi brain is sort of like the D brain in M theory. And so what we really want to deal with, if we want to understand the self-dual string and understand phi brains, is look at open membranes. just as if you want to understand dBrains, you should look at open strings. Only now what we have is we actually have a theory of membranes. And so what we want to do is to have the membrane have a boundary and then work out new properties of the theory, in particular, the boundary dynamics. Okay. Now, the point is, when you have supersymmetry in the presence of a boundary, you naively just immediately break supersymmetry. Yeah?
When you say you have the theory of membranes, you mean they k equal to 1?
Yeah. Take k equals 1. Or take k anything you want. But 1 will be. Okay.
Understand. Okay. So what I'm going to do is basically take ABJM or Bagger-Lambert, whichever you prefer, and then say that we have a boundary in the theory. Now, basically, what do you do when you have a boundary with supersymmetry? Obviously, because you break translation invariance, you will also break supersymmetry. Now, what you can do is restore a fraction of the supersymmetry through the addition of appropriate boundary terms in the action. So there are sort of two ways to think about this. You can either add additional boundary conditions, which are supersymmetric, or actually encode them through boundary dynamics in a boundary action. Okay. So I'm going to take the second point of view, that you encode boundary dynamics in the action, and then that's going to be associated to my self-dual string. So I'm going to describe the general, let's say, algorithm that was developed by Peter von Neuhausen to describe how you get back supersymmetry in when you have some superspace formulated action. So this is sort of basic technical thing. Then if I have some superfield as follows in n equals 1, and then it can be integrated over superspace to form an action. This is the supersymmetry transformation in component form. In the presence of a boundary, those supersymmetry transformations will then give this term. Well, it will give this term. And then in the presence of a boundary, it won't vanish. So that's your sort of immediate problem. So the von Neuhausen prescription of how to fix this is as follows. What you do is you introduce the following sort of boundary action, which is, we've written the boundary like this, and then you take b phi, sorry, that should be theta equals 0 part of phi, which will then give you dx. If I go back, sorry. Yeah. So I take the theta equals 0 part of phi, which is just a, and I'll get this. Okay, and then the supersymmetry variation of this thing will be this. And then the combination of this action, that's the first action, and the term that you've added, the boundary action, will be as follows. And then you can see that you'll then preserve half the supersymmetry for spinners that obey this projection. And then you'll have a choice. So you can preserve either 1,0 or 0,1 supersymmetry through the combination of this S1 term.
Not easily, because you have to set theta equals 0. So it's naturally when you do the integral over superspace, you get the other side.
Yeah, because we're not putting boundary conditions. We are adding in a boundary action.
Can you do it just for a wall sheet of fundamental theory?
Yeah, you must be able to. I haven't done that, but yeah, you must be able to.
That's what you're saying, boundary union.
Okay. Now, there's an additional thing that you have to worry about. So we're doing all this in superspace,
and we have auxiliary fields. And in some cases, typically when we have gauge fields, in fact, then what you find is that your auxiliary fields can't be integrated out, at least certainly not easily integrated out. But what you're free to do is to supplement this theory with any other supersymmetric theory on the boundary. Because if you add in a supersymmetric theory on the boundary, it's still going to be supersymmetric. In particular, if you take the codimension one reductions of the original superfields, you can then form an action that is supersymmetric on the boundary, and you can add that and then cancel off the problematic interactions of the auxiliary fields, and then you can then be allowed to integrate out the auxiliary fields. This is a bit of a technical point which I didn't want to go through, but if you're interested, you can read this in the paper. But you need to add on an additional term that allows you to integrate out the auxiliary fields made up out of codimension one reductions in the original superfields. That's the technical point. So there are two sources of the correction. So we now carry this out for ABJM in the, that should be N equals 2 superfield formulation. So throughout all of this, we only ever managed to work in N equals 2 superfields, essentially, even though we really want to do this in N equals 8 or N equals 6. I mean, is there a question, Alex?
Thank you.
Right. So we would really like to have done this in N equals 6 for ABJM or N equals 8, but the superspace formalism for N equals 8, etc., was a little bit beyond us at the moment. It does exist. But we chose to write that theory in terms of N equals 2 superfields and then crank through the Van Neuenhausen procedure. Now, when you do this, there are two choices that you can make. Depending on which supersymmetry you preserve, you can preserve N equals 2 comma 0 or N equals 1 comma 1. So first of all, I'm going to just give you the answer of what happens when you apply this procedure for N equals 2 comma 0. So what do we have here? V is actually gauge field. This is actually sort of half of ABJM. V is gauge field. We've got some spinners, some auxiliary, some other scalar A. And Z are your physical scalars that in the usual ABJM and Bagger-Lambert thing would have a cestic coupling. So your new interaction with, due to this boundary term, is a new potential with Z to the 4. And then when we look at the equation and motion of that, then we get this thing here. And how do we interpret this? So if we go back, and I didn't write out the bulk action for you, but if I go back to the bulk action, and just consider ordinary closed membranes and employ the Bogomolny trick and assume only X3 dependence, and the Hamiltonian is given as follows. So there is our cestic potential from before. And then we do the Bogomolny thing, and then we see that the Bogomolny equation is identical to this equation of motion that was generated by including the boundary term to make the thing supersymmetric. Okay. So what's sort of nice here is that our sort of natural supersymmetric boundary dynamics comes about and is identical to what happens when you form BPS equation, which is quite nice. And I think that's probably quite general. Okay. Now, this equation is known to produce, is known to be the same as, and here I've skipped putting in the appropriate bracket, is known to be the same as the Basu-Harvey equation, which gives this solution. Okay. So what I've shown is that if you begin with ABJM or Bagger-Lambert, add in a boundary and demand supersymmetry of a certain type, then you'll reproduce the Basu-Harvey equation. Now, there's then the other choice of supersymmetry, which is N equals 1, 1. And you go through, again, this long, complicated procedure of Van Neuenhausen, and you produce this thing. and then you look at the equivalent equations of motion, and you end up with this set. And this is sort of new, and I don't know how to interpret this. So in the first case, there was a clear, and it was already seen and known about in the literature, and almost the starting point to get this Basu-Harvey equation. There are now these equations, which should tell you something about how the membrane with a boundary, and how the boundary is embedded into your theory. And these are two coupled equations. So they're sort of similar to Basu-Harvey, but coupled, along with some additional constraint. Okay. So previously with the Basu and Harvey, because it was an S3, I only had half of the scalars turned on, just the Zs, and now we have Z and W in these coupled equations. So a challenge, somebody should solve these equations and interpret them in terms of brain physics. And that's not been done yet. And I'm quite curious to know what the answer is. Anyone, any ideas? It should be, I mean, it really should be simple, I think, because it's just another description of, again, it should be membranes with some boundaries. So, it could be something like that you have a more complicated brain setup. Instead of a single M5, maybe you have multiple M5s. I'm not sure. Who knows? But these equations need to be solved. Okay. And there should be some equivalent brain interpretation of those, but I don't know them. Okay. So this is the beginning of trying to understand the self-loop string. And we should also do a little bit more than we've done. So we only did really n equals 2, but we should really have worked with n equals 8, and then we'd get, expect to have a 4,4 supermultiplet. And then what you could then do is compare that to properties of the self-dual string. So you've got the dynamics of this thing, of this sort of boundary term, and you're hoping that those dynamics are capturing the self-dual string. And to go a little bit further, we should probably include more supersymmetry. The thing that would be nice if you could really interpret this in terms of the phi brain. Because somehow we know that with open strings, you can learn a lot about D brains. The problem is here, it looks like you can learn about open membranes, but shifting how you know all you want about open membranes to the phi brain is the problem. And if anyone has any ideas how to do that, I'd also be very interested.
Okay. St. Paul's supposedly associated on the I-brain slice.
Sorry, say that again.
What are the implications on the five-brain side for the different
boundary conditions?
Right.
Yeah. So as I say, I don't know.
I mean, one of them just seems to be the 2,0 case is just this usual thing. It's somehow the five-brain has some half BPS solution. It's just the simple M2 ending on it like this. The other one, because we don't have the solution, I don't know how to interpret it.
I think they're completely different choices, yeah. So maybe even it's not, actually I must say there's a bit of an assumption here, maybe it's not a five brain
right,
in the second choice. It could be something else.
Oh, so there may be different five brains.
It could be different five brains, or it could be, I mean, different. You know, if you have an orbifold, you can have sort of things like M9s. Because you know, so you could imagine having compactification of an interval, your membranes can end on those, and then the point is then you would have, naturally, your membrane would associate to some sort of 8-sphere that blows up to generate the M9s. Something like that, or 7-sphere, whichever it is. So it could be that those solutions describe that, and it may not be a fibrain at all. But one needs to solve the equations in order to know that.
So what's the paper that starts from this M2 brain and got the D3 LE2 brain? Mm-hmm. Can you follow it now, including this boundary term, and get also 5?
We've not done that, no. So there should be a relationship to how brains in string theory end on other brains too. But that's not being developed. Basically, the number of people who have followed this work of Van Neuenhausen seems to be small, or at least have used it, mainly because it's painful. And the papers are not that easy to read, and perhaps you need a good motivation to struggle through it. But we think we know quite a lot about how brains end on brains in string theory, less so in M theory, so it's sort of worthwhile pursuing it.
Say compactify so your constructed on S1 set off your previous two boundary conditions and see what you get.
Yeah. So what you do is, so the equation,
where this equation, I mean a bit lax with this bracket because these are sort of non-abelian fields. But when you dimensionally reduce, this equation actually reduces to the NAM equation. And then you get back to like the D3, D1 system, or the equivalent to, I guess, it would be something like D4, D2. It's the same co-dimension too when you dimension reduce. We've not dimension reduced it. So this set of equations is still a mystery. There should be a good brain interpretation.
Confirming lyrics as well? Are they still confirmed?
They preserve...
They manifestly break some translation symmetry because of X3, but there's a scaling invariance here. Okay. Let's go and see what else we can learn. So people went back and they looked at when we remove these constraints on F, these structure constants, you could have other exotic gauge groups. It's not really, you can have things like exceptional groups and God knows what. It's not obvious what these mean for membranes, but there's some interpretation issue there. Perturbative membrane calculations are now possible in, when you take the large K limit, and you can try various things, and conformal invariance is being checked directly at two loops, though it's no big surprise. You can even consider adding higher order corrections to the membrane outside the low energy limit to get the L-Planck corrections. Because although I said this was a theory of membranes, that's not strictly true. This is a decoupled theory of membranes in the same sense that Yang-Mills is a theory of D3 brains. That's not really true. That's only true at low stored in alpha prime. So the ABJM and Bagger-Lambert theory is only a correct restriction of membranes to lowest order in L Planck. So you might want corrections to that. Okay. And there's a very nice relationship to global limits of gauge supergravities. And that was worked by Eric Bergschoff. Now, some comments about what we can learn from perturbation theory. So K can't be renormalized. Not even by finite shifts, since we don't have a sensible space-time interpretation, because you know that K was in fact the orbifold number, ZK. However, it is known that Chern-Simons theories can have a finite shift in the renormalization of K. And this goes back to a work of Witten, I think, in the original Jones polynomial paper. Now, so what you can try and do with Bagger-Lambert theory and see if you can work out this finite shift in renormalization of K. And the remarkable result is that Bagger-Lambert theory and the massive deformations actually produce a shift at one loop of K goes to K plus 2. This is problematic for Bagger-Lambert theory because it tells you if I include one loop corrections, then I'll get this shift, but K is no longer just some coupling constant, it has an interpretation of a ZK orbifold. So you've got two choices. Either your one loop correction to the membrane theory is changing space, is changing the orbifold structure of space time, like K goes to K plus 2, or you shouldn't really be doing a one loop calculation with Bagger-Lambert. ABJM has no such shift. And this is because In ABJM, I didn't really go through the details of that. The scalar potential comes from integrating out some gauginos in the Chern-Simons multiplet, and doing that integrating out actually generates a shift in K if K goes to K minus 2, and they cancel. So I would say the rather subtle point is that Bagger-Lambert should really be thought of as an effective theory, and ABJM is more fundamental where there is no shift in this coupling K.
What is the level theory is only coupled?
Yeah, so
Bagger-Lambert theory can still introduce an arbitrary K. It was originally written down with K equals 1, but actually there was an arbitrary K that you could always introduce. And then that corresponds effectively, what we know now, as the ZK orbifolding. The restriction of it to UN, sorry, to SU2 cross SU2 is the particular Bagger-Lambert thing. But you could always introduce a K.
So this calculation is done in the large K limit?
This calculation is done in the large K limit in order to do perturbation theory. But it's believed, I mean, it's known to be true in Chern-Simons theory. This is essentially comes because of the Chern-Simons part. You have to worry a little bit about the fermions, but it comes a lot to do with the Chern-Simons part. And in Chern-Simons theory, you know, it's non-perturbatively true. In this case, you can't show it's non-perturbatively true, but you get the same result as the Chern-Simons theory in the perturbative limit.
But doesn't the Bagger-Lambert theory has more supersymmetry?
It does.
So you say if I have some less supersymmetry,
well, it's more about how the details of how ABJM formulated this was really in terms of matter Chern-Simons theory with a Chern-Simons multiplet. In Bagger-Lambert theory, you didn't have a Chern-Simons multiplet. You just have a Chern-Simons field. Having the multiplet, what you do is you integrate out auxiliary fields to generate the scalar potential. And that's sort of fine, but actually that can generate a finite shift.
Doesn't ABJM reduce to Bagger-Lambert when M is 2?
Only when you've done this integrating out. It's a fact that's not often repeated in the literature. Because it's sort of, I mean, if you ignore these one loop effects, then on shell they're the same, but there's an integrating out of auxiliary fields in order to do the identification, and that actually has this one loop correction. Okay. So there's some big questions still remaining. So what about this n to the 3 over 2 degrees of freedom? I should also say, why is the n equals 8 supersymmetry only manifest with the Bagger-Lambert case? That's not really understood. It just seems to be a state of affairs. The n to the 3 over 2 degrees of freedom is sort of very disappointing, because we now think with ABJM, etc., we have some action that describes interacting membranes, but actually that action is written in terms of ordinary gauge fields, which has an matter, which, and it just looks like it's got n squared degrees of freedom. So what you can do is say, well, what seems to have happened is that as you go to strong coupling, it goes to the n to the 3 over 2, and you just can't calculate the entropy in that theory. So it's more telling you that we were wrong to think that we understood n squared degrees of freedom in Yang-Mills and ADS-CFT. I mean, famously, in ADS-CFT, if I look at the entropy as some function of the Hertzhoff coupling, then I go, let's see if I get this right. Well, I'll do it. Right, this is F of lambda. S is equal to F of lambda n squared, some number, and this is 1, and this is 3/4. And somehow people felt that this was that we understood this because you could calculate at weak coupling, essentially it was free theory. And we got some function of n squared. And then at strong coupling, you go to the ADS dual, and then this function would then be 3/4. And you somehow didn't worry it was 3/4. You said that was a strong coupling effect. But then we thought we understood what the n squared was. So what you have for the membrane is, you can also write for the membrane
a similar thing. Go over here. So for the membrane, you could also write S is some function of lambda and squared, but now F of lambda and I should say that lambda is like n over k in this theory. Let me get this right. So at weak coupling, it should be like n squared. And then, boom, how am I going to do this? So this should go like some square root. 1 over square root, so f of lambda should go like lambda to the minus a half. Is that lambda to the minus a half? Should go like lambda to the minus a half. So that's not lambda to the minus a half. let me get it right. How do you draw lambda to the minus a half? How do you draw lambda to the minus half? Like this, right? That's better. Is that right? Thank you. Now, so previously, we were sort of lucky with ADS5 that it just went between 1 3/4. There's some function in between. And then we said, oh, we understand why there's n squared gluons, because it matches the free theory. In M theory, that's not the case. So it can this ABGM may be working just fine. It's just that we can't calculate what the entropy is at strong coupling. And at weak coupling, it's just going to go back to n squared still in the free theory. The entropy.
Yes. Okay.
What on site layer? They considered offline corrections to this, and they showed that it does behave in the right direction at least. Is there a similar calculation for this?
Yeah. So okay. But you know, it's not. These calculations are not very profound. I mean, if you go to strong coupling, you're going to lower the entropy. So they showed that indeed it goes like this. I mean, they never matched it up, right? They said this goes down. I mean, if you just take two things with a spring and the spring is tensionless, you'll get an entropy, and you crank up the tension of the spring, the entropy will go down because you go from having 2 degrees of freedom when the spring is completely has no tension to 1 degree of freedom when it has infinite tension. And it's just, it's sort of a very natural thing. So you don't really learn anything from doing that calculation. So, what's subtle is what happens here. The fact that it goes down is obvious. The fact it then levels off to a constant is the non-trivial thing.
No, there is a monotonically decreasing function as a function of half prime. It could have exhibited a maximum and then gone down, right?
Yeah. Okay. I would say the free theory is always going to have more entropy. But, because as your constraining thing, but that's a physicist's hand-wavy thing. Okay.
So if k is large, we have a limit that goes to string theory where the entropy is going to like n squared.
Yeah.
If k is large, is sort of like weak coupling, right? K is large. I thought the weak coupling is like n over k.
So you really have sort of two coupling constants in this, just like in ADS5. So you've got 1 over k and you've got lambda, which is related to n. So
you should really think of the effective coupling in this theory as lambda.
Right.
Just like you do in the Yang-Mills theory.
Right.
And then you look at this function as a function of lambda.
Sure. So since the painter is really at
the weak could hoof copying, but we don't quite understand what's going on right now. So entropy what?
The weak has sort of coupling.
Yeah.
Is fine. So that's when, for example, k is large and n is small.
Okay, sorry. Yeah,
sorry. And then we can just do free theory.
Sorry. Yeah, sorry.
Strong, we have. Now, I want to make
one more comment about this n to the 3 over 2 degrees of freedom. So, throughout all of this has been this picture that there's been this fuzzy 3-sphere around. And this fuzzy 3-sphere, for example, is here. So here there was some thickness, and this was some S3 of radius R. And although I didn't go through it, R was a function of n, where n was the number of M2 brains. When you do the Basu-Harvey calculation, you actually show that R goes like n to the half in some large n limit. And then there's something quite curious here. So a fuzzy 3-sphere is basically a 3-sphere with a finite number of degrees of freedom when you have a field on it, because you have both an ultraviolet and infrared cutoff. You've got the size of the sphere for the infrared thing, ultraviolet cutoff because essentially the fuzziness. So if you look at the total number of degrees of freedom on the fuzzy 3-sphere, where the radius of the fuzzy 3-sphere goes like n to the half, then you end up with n to the 3 over 2 degrees of freedom. So this is a sort of cute observation, and some people have tried to make more of it, myself and these guys, Matsuo and also Banos and Townsend. And in fact, this can work quite well when you go to n strictly at infinity and you have a 3-sphere. The problem is this doesn't match the ABJM or Bagger-Lambert thing at finite n. So there's a cute thing where it looks like there's a nice non-commutative geometric description of what these n to the 3 over degrees of freedom are, is that you geometrically have a fuzzy 3-sphere here. And that the radius of that fuzzy 3-sphere, all right, so the radius divided by the cutoff goes like n to the half, where n is the number of brains, then you will end up with the right scaling. But it's hard to go further with that. It's even harder to get what you want, which is the n to the 3 over 2. Okay, perhaps I'll skip this. There's a whole story about the relationship Tian-Mills theory and D2 brains, but we'll skip that and a whole bunch of other stuff. And I'll end on this. Can we answer any M-theory question using the membrane theory? So it's great, we've got an action. We could produce T-shirts, or indeed coffee mugs, as they have here. I was really pleased that when I arrived, I got both a coffee mug and a T-shirt with PI on it. But now I've got my longed-for action for the membrane. I can put it on my T-shirt and coffee cup, but I don't know how to answer any of the questions which I want to know about in M-theory. And in particular, what I really want to know about is the fibrin. And I believe this sort of considering boundary actions is useful, but this is the thing to think about. How can you move from understanding boundaries and membranes to knowledge about the low energy effective dynamics of fibrins? With open strings, you could do it. You went from knowledge of open strings to the effective theory of that, which gave you Yang-Mills. So what I'm trying to sell you is that somewhere along the line, there should be a similar prescription of how you're ever going to describe the fibrin theory. And this work about the supersymmetric self-dual string was sort of technical work along that way. But there's still a big conceptual hole about how you move between. Okay, thank you.
Can I ask about the curve about, say, entropy again?
Yeah.
So I thought this thing is that when the proof coupling is large, one has the spring theory dual. So
yeah.
So that is like when. So
that's the ADS side.
Right. So and also so there's some so double escape element. So when both element k large, a lambda large.
Yeah.
So we have the spring theory dual.
Yeah.
So in a sense, so that curve should really when we go to say large proof coupling, so that curve really should suppose to something that's
N 2 3 over 2.
Constant. Not N 2 3.
Oh, constant. Yeah. I put this curve off the top of my head, so I'm not going to. Oh, you see, okay. It's because I wrote this as N squared here.
Right. And what I meant is that if I keep.
So the point is, I mean, it depends what how you want to split this function between N squared. And it's the reason why I wrote N squared here is because at weak coupling, it's N squared.
Right.
And then the point is. F of lambda, and then goes like lambda to the minus a half, so that large lambda, it goes like n to the 3 over 2. And if you want, I could have written the thing here.
No, I'm just saying that it's not clear to me that one should look. You see or not?
You're right.
Sorry?
You're right.
Okay, sorry. So, I mean, I thought when n is large, k is large, but lambda is large, we know the entropy scale is like n squared.
Yeah.
Because it is like ADS.
Sorry, so when k is large.
But n is also large, and lambda also large.
Okay. So you're saying because k is large, you're going over to the D2 brain description.
Yes, right.
That's what you mean. Yeah. Yeah, so within this somewhere, I guess I've fixed what k is. Story. I mean, yeah. I've got two couplings. I've got k, I've got n, and 1 over k, and I'm letting things move lambda. But it's like over here, when I do this thing, I've got gs and n, and then I'm writing this thing really like this.
Okay,
if you say I could take it.
But to be fair, that graph you're drawing is only applying when lambda over n is equal to 0, right? Because if lambda was order n the way you want to draw it there, then I'm doing string theory.
Yeah.
I'm not doing supergravity.
Yeah.
I don't really know what the answer is.
Yeah, okay. That's true. Okay. And get into trouble with these graphs. They're schematically meant. They're schematically meant to show you that what you're doing is that you have different regimes that you can calculate: weak coupling, strong coupling, and you're interpolating between them with some function. And that over here we sort of got lucky, and then people made a big deal of this right at the time that you had n squared, and really it was just that this function went between 1 3/4. And I think what we've learned now. Is that this function, in the case of membrane, it's actually a function that doesn't not bounded in the same way, it's some constant. And yeah, you can worry about other limit things. Yeah.
We do the analog with strings that ends on D-brain.
Mm-hmm.
We learn that if you have a small open string and below energy limit of it, become a point right by the elementary excitation, which you take a local gauge.
Yeah.
We will try to do the same thing here with.
Should be a string.
It would not be local, it would be extended.
Yeah.
But we have the ADS7 times a string, which tells us that the dual purely should be local in DB.
Why does it tell you it's local? It tells you it's conformal.
What does it tell you?
Where does it tell you it's a local theory?
This is the whole point of ADS16. You can always map the degrees of freedom in the boundary to the degrees of freedom in the bar.
Yeah, I'm happy with the mapping of degrees of freedom from one to the other, but why do those degrees of freedom have to be local?
Because the way you do computation in ADS?
Well, no, the way that you've done it in ADS5, maybe, but given the fact you don't know what the theory is on the conformal field theories on ADS7, so what are you going
to
do?
Also from the high energy entropy, so like local conformal field theory. But
yeah. Well, if you can. Well, I mean, there's different ways to think about this. I mean, first of all, so you get a string, but then you'd have to work out what the tension of the string is. So it looks like the tension of the string will go to zero.
It's easier than it was.
Yeah. So, you know, if someone was saying, what would you expect the theory of the fibrin to be? I'd say it's like closed string field theory beyond the Hagedorn transition. Yeah, more than me, I don't know. But I think you can't just, you'll be very careful just taking over what you've done in ADS5 and then Mills theory, and then saying that's sort of how it's going to work in ADS7 and this other conformal field theory. Because you don't know what that comes from.
I think at least in the limit that it reduces to the theorem which is dual for radius 7, it still must be local.
Sorry, I still haven't actually seen what has to do. It says, I mean, ADS-CFT, my book says you have two theories that are dual. Why must one be local?
Because the observers. This gravity side is postponed to
I don't see it. I don't see it. We'll talk about it later, but I don't see it. But it has to be local. But.
Well, can I just ask one more question? So if I put in all the supersymmetry that I have, 3,3 on the boundary, is that?
That's what you'd expect for the N equals 6 ABJ.
For the ABJ. So, have people also classified all the possible, say, Susie preservations and boundary conditions and see what are
the. I believe not for this theory. Because this theory is relatively new. And so, there's this work of Gayotto and Witten, but I don't believe it entirely covers this set of theories. Anything else?
Can I ask you? You were talking about this R goes at the end of the half.
Yeah.
And there was some argument. Well, it was very brief. I didn't really follow what you were trying to do. But if you did the same thing with the D string ending on the D3 brain, do the arguments go through the way?
Yeah, you get N squared.
But you were saying it didn't quite match. Does the matching work exactly?
Okay, when you do this thing, you mean, the thing that doesn't match is the, if you like, the theory of a non-commutative S3, which has n to the 3 over 2 degrees of freedom, when n is equal to 2, is the same as Bagger-Lambert theory, and when n is equal to infinity, also matches what ABJM when n is equal to infinity. But at other points in n, it's not the same algebra. So the idea of this was to sort of geometricize that sort of weird three bracket thing and then perhaps or whatever interpret geometrically what that, you know, there's two, why you have two gauge groups and stuff. So the weird thing was with Bagger-Lambert, there were two points matching, infinity and 2. But because SU2 cross SU2 is like S3, you see. But the arbitrary algebra for SUN cross SUN ABJN does not go over to an arbitrary fuzzy 3 sphere. I should say, if you do the thing with a, say, a D1 ending on a D3, and then you get a fuzzy 2 sphere, you also get n squared. And then so that's sort of cute. And you then really got fuzzy 2 spheres, and then they naturally form into SUN representations, and it sort of works. So it was sort of an attempt to geometricize this sort of weird algebras. And the clue is the fact that they're non-associative. But it didn't quite go. There might still be something in it, and you might need to think about what it really means.
Sure.
Okay.